We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Thank you for listening to Spin, the Rally Pod, brought to you by Dirtfish Rally School. For your chance to experience life behind the wheel of a rally car, head to drive.dirtfish.com to find the course that's right for you. What are you waiting for? We're right here waiting for you.
Hello, Dirtfish Rally friends, and welcome to another episode of Spin, the Rally Pod. I'm your host today, Alistair Lindsay, and with me, as always, two titans of the rally media landscape. In the red corner, we have the man who has worked for Toyota, Mitsubishi, Subaru, all the big names in the World Rally Championship. It is George Donaldson. How are you, George?
Well, what a grand introduction. Yeah, thank you very much. Fabulously well. It should be red and blue in that case, because that would be the colours, Mitsubishi and Subaru and Toyota.
Yes, but then the metaphor doesn't work anymore, George, because it's red corner and blue corner. You've taken them both.
I'm happy with that. It's a win-win
that
situation.
It wouldn't be the first time.
So in the green corner, we have some bloke who lives out in the sticks in the middle of nowhere.
Can I be the orange corner?
Apparently does rallies.
I know who this is. You're introducing Jeremy Clarkson. You've got Jeremy Clarkson on the call.
I'm just laughing. A bit more with him. I apart from my ever expanding weight, I've never been called Titan before, or a Titan. But yeah, fabulous to be here as ever. Thank you very much, Alistair, for that splendid intro.
Absolutely,
you're
I have
welcome.
To say this is big steps to follow here, because last week's podcast with the team in the Dirtfish HQ boardroom, Nate Brenton. And,
awesome.
And who else was it?
There was Jack and...
Jack, yes.
Yeah.
The three fabulous podcasts. Yes. Loved it. Yeah. Absolutely loved it, guys. Thank you.
Yeah.
I did send them a note saying that, but it was a lovely podcast.
Do you know, I think actually, as we speak, I think they're actually recording their post-Olympus podcast now.
As they should, yes, and beat a hasty retreat from their predictions of what they wanted to see as well. I checked very carefully that what they were saying, and I went and checked the results, and they weren't what I'd been led to believe, and I was very disappointed that one of my friends there, Sean Edwards, one of the instructors, sadly failed to finish. But he was going very well actually. He made three stages and got to service, and then he disappeared. But he came out the next day for a while. I've not checked through all the results, but he went quite well.
No, some good times in open two-wheel drive. I will forward you.
A big old Volvo. It was very, very impressive.
Yeah. I'm going to forward to the group chat, and we will put them on. We'll put these pictures on social. I always say we'll put them on social. We never do. We really should do.
All right. Okay.
But I am sending them right now, and we will very quickly. Alistair, I'm really sorry about this. You've done just sublime itinerary in running order, and we are just trampling all over it. Mm-hmm. But if you very quickly have a look at the WhatsApp group, this really doesn't work on a podcast, but stay tuned.
We will put
these on social, but you'll be able to see what happened to the fabulous Volvo 242, and particularly the left rear of it.
I want to see those. Get those
they're in Georgia. They're in the WhatsApp group now. In
chaps, it does sound like we're in a race against the Americans here to get our podcast recorded.
Lovely.
So perhaps we should get to it. We actually have quite a lot to get through. What are we going to talk about today? Where's the point system? There's certain drivers from Croatia. There's Pastrana. There's Sesks making his debut. There's a whole bunch of stuff we need to cover. So I'm going to get right to it. First of all, If you're reading dirtfish.com, you'll have seen yesterday a story from one Sebastian Ogier deciding to voice his opinion. Now that it's the second round of the season, he's sampled the point system properly now. And suffice to say, not really a big fan. Now, just to catch you up, in case you haven't heard this, in a moment you will hear the dulcet tones of Sebastian Ogier. This is what he had to say about the point system.
I don't know, I think everybody feels strange today because, you know, it's the third weekend after four rally this weekend where nobody understands what's happening with the points. It's unbelievably wrong. It's really a pure joke. And that's a shame because you don't see, like, Yari Matisse on the podium. Nobody is smiling. Nobody is, like, for me at least, it's the second degree because I'm not playing the championship. But it's really sad to see that you give point to everybody and there's no difference. And then the result is not shown at all in the points. So at the end, there will be a champion. But I don't know, whoever it's going to be, it looks strange. It's not natural anymore. So that's a sad part of today.
Yeah, absolutely it is. So does it in some ways devalue the victory for you?
It's not in some way. It's completely devaluing victory and devaluing good results. So in France, we have a show named L'École des Fans. It's for kids. You give points to everybody. Like, always give them a 10 because they want to make them happy. That's basically what happened in WRC.
Gentlemen, what do you make of Seb's opinion on that?
I'm really disappointed that Sebastian, I'm very disappointed in Sebastian, that he hasn't made his views completely clear there.
No. Yeah, but what does he really think, David? I know. Yeah.
Wow.
It's a bit soft, isn't it?
Yeah.
I could swing either way on it. I don't like it in principle, but I understand what it's trying to do. I don't think any of it was really necessary. I think it introduces a little bit more jeopardy into the event where it doesn't need any, you know.
It
puts a different dynamic.
Tell me about Kenyan Sunday without the new point system, George.
Yeah, it would still been a Sunday. It would have been fine.
But no, come on.
It would have been
fine. It would have been boring. It would have been saving tyres for however many stages, then having a crack on the power stage.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, there maybe is some value to some aspect of it, but I still think the winner of the rally needs to be walking away with more points. If they wanted to do that, fine, but don't finish the rally on a Saturday night for points. Let it go all the way to Sunday, full points, and then have additional points come in. And why did they need to limit it to this notional 30 points is the maximum you can score sort of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it's not now. Of course, it's considerably more in reality.
Well, it's not though, is it? You know, that's the point. It is.
Well, it's not. Yeah,
18, 7, and 5.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a bit disappointing. Yeah.
You know, the crucial thing here that everybody is unified in is the fact that we don't want the winner to be outscored. So you win the rally, you take your 25 points. The best that the second place driver can do is 18 plus 5 is 23. They're always going to be 2 points behind.
Much better idea.
Yeah. It was great. It was really interesting. And last weekend, Croatia really did completely divide everybody on this subject. In fact, they didn't divide it. I'd say unified it. Because even the people that were on the periphery, Thierry Neuville was a bit of a fan. Thierry's kind of coming around to seeing that actually it is, I hate to use the word unfair, but it's perhaps unjust. It's just not really working. And Sebastian Ogier just is the most brilliant orator. And we miss people like him in the sport because he stood there and said exactly what he thought. In fairness, so did Alvin Evans, so did Ott Tanak, so did everybody. This is the one point they are willing to stand up and get on the soapbox. Ogier, we haven't heard from him since Monte Carlo. It's only the second time he's competed under this point system. He hated it.
Yep.
He absolutely hated it. And it was very, very hard to argue. Just as it was in Kenya when all of that madness happened to Hyundai and they still came, you know, within touching distance of taking home the same number of points as Toyota.
Yeah.
But the one point, sorry, I'm just going to make this one point and then I promise I will shut up. Entertainment. It did work in terms of an entertaining Sunday. It delivered. but I still think it's wrong.
That I can definitely agree with. Of course, there will be some people highlighting that in Croatia's case specifically, most of that probably would have happened anyway. Perhaps not Formo. I reckon Formo would have, you know, kept it a bit more within the lines than he did. But, you know, that battle for victory between Evans and Neville, you know, it would have still been there. It would have still been fought just as hard. But actually, of everyone, I think the person who maybe had the best opinion of the lot, the most measured, is probably Oit Tanak. The point that he made, that it's easy to get carried away with this, oh, it's too complicated, oh, we should just go back to the way it was before. Going back to the way it was before is not necessarily the answer either.
No,
my opinion from the beginning has been that, you know, the old system belongs to the past. It needed tweaking. It just potentially didn't need tweaking in this specific implementation. And it needs further work and it needs further revision. But we can't just say, oh, this is silly, this is absurd, therefore we should just go back and do it the old way. The old way was great. The old way was simple. The old way applies to the old way of rallying. You know, the dynamics have changed. Reliability is higher than ever before. And the point I've made in the past is that this is less so a debate about mathematics and when do you assign the points, where in the rally do you assign them. This is more about what are the competitive values of modern rallying. Is what applied 20, 30 years ago appropriate for today? Once you understand what it is you want rallying in 2024 to represent, then you can start designing a point system from scratch that reflects that, rather than just adapting what you've got. And, you know, that's what they've done. They've taken the existing system, tried to manipulate it a little bit to achieve a certain outcome, and they've achieved that outcome, but it's caused a whole other host of problems. So, blank sheet of paper potentially needed in 25.
I'm not sure it's a blank sheet of paper. You know, if they need to stay within the 30 points, which probably they do to keep it within the FIA, you know, guidelines of what points mean, then fine. And I quite agree that Oit Tanak is a very, very intelligent person. There's absolutely no getting away from that. And we saw that, you know, in the way that, again, the way that he very eloquently spoke and came up with the fact that actually, no, don't go back. That's wrong. Evolve. And here's how to evolve. But yeah, it was...
What was his suggestion, David?
Evolve, George. Evolve.
Oh, just evolve. Just, okay, so actually no tangible input then. That's understood. Okay.
Nobody, was good. But just generally, approach, I have to say, talking to him, it was enormously refreshing. And there is collectively this need to see things changed again. And crucially, the FAA told us at the start of the season, that told Dirtfish that they would be willing to change.
Absolutely. And they need to, keen to see it happen. Yeah.
Yeah, they need to be ready to do that now. It was not good enough. There was an extra point that I wanted to make off the back of what Ogier said. You know, it's points for everybody. Just, you had to feel for the guy in Croatia. We got to the podium and he went up and he came back to us after he'd been on the podium and he said, you know, it's just not right. It just, there is not the feeling of, wow, we've just won a round of the World Rally Championship, because 2 minutes earlier they've said, "Yee, well done, Takemoto Katsuta, you've won Super Sunday. Wee.
Yeah. Yeah.
Adrian Formo, you've won the power stage." You know, everybody's winning something. And we need to get away from that as well. You know, Ogier's bang on the money, that a win needs to be celebrated and embraced like you've just driven your heart out for 3 days. That's what you've got.
Speaking of the final day, actually, moving this along a little bit, I understand, George, you've been taking a very close look at stage number 18 and all the chaos.
My favourite job. My favourite job, I love this. I love this aspect of this podcast. So I did as much analysis of Elfyn Evans and Thierry Neuville's mistakes on stage 18 as I could. So it started off, I'd actually managed to find some fan footage, which was really interesting, because the fan footage that I saw of Elfyn just shows him spinning out in the corner, and you're sort of thinking, I wonder what happened before that. But of course, we get the onboards. I can go and look at the onboards. So I did exactly the same for for Terry Neuville. And what I hadn't realised, because I didn't follow everything stage by stage on the Sunday of the rally, because I was busy doing a few other bits and pieces, so sort of listening in now and again. What I didn't realise was that Elfyn Evans had a massive moment where Terry Neuville crashed on stage 18. Did you know that, David? I suppose you did, because he must have mentioned that.
No, he didn't. Not at all.
Well, I can tell you. I can tell you it was huge. Absolutely huge. It was an incredibly slippery place. They both entered that particular corner. It's just short of 2 minutes into the stage, 1 minute 51 seconds. And they were basically tied, certainly within a second of each other, at the point that they reached that. However, I viewed it from the start of the stage for each of them. And you would have said that Thierry Neuville, just from what you could see and hear, it looked to me like Thierry Neuville would be 5 seconds quicker to that point. And I had to go and check it twice to make sure they started the stopwatch at the same place and everything was right. And I was actually looking at the right place, which I was. They were absolutely tied second for second. The difference in the techniques and the approach to that stage was just as different as the difference between a Group N car and a Group B car is what it looked like. It was as big a difference as that. Elfyn was careful and longer in each gear, not changing down the box anything as much. I haven't counted the gear changes. That would have been interesting to do, because I would have said it was a huge amount of difference, although inevitably I would be proven wrong because I have counted gear changes on stages before. So the point at which the corner where that stopped Thierry, they were basically tied second for second. Elfyn appeared to my mind to be about, I think, somewhere between 3 and 6 kilometres slower out of the previous corner. And he lost it. And he then spent his time getting it together. And he went from 140 kph down to about, I think it was about 80 kph. And as far as I could see, Thierry came out the corner doing just that couple of, I mean, just in like it's not even the same corner. He flies out of that corner, accelerating. Elfyn couldn't because he'd already lost traction at the point at which Thierry was still accelerating. Such was the difference in the approach to that stage. And then Elfyn goes up. Thierry goes up there. He obviously presses his brakes. It's, I don't know, 40, 50, 60, maybe 70 metres. It's difficult to gauge. But he doesn't scrub much speed at all, according to the GPS on the car. But I'm not quite sure how quickly that cycles. But he only lost about 20 kph. And it would appear to me that, well, according to the speedo, and I'm sure it's not really super accurate in this, but he appeared to hit that bank about somewhere between 90 and 110 kph, I think. He didn't lose. He basically landed on the brakes. He realised he'd got it wrong. There was no grip, whatever. And he seemed to land on the brakes. Whereas the same situation, Elfyn going just a fraction slower, was busy gathering it up. He certainly wasn't on the power. The point at which Thierry was full power accelerating, Elfyn was already trying to collect it together. So whether it was a missed note or whether it was, I think Thierry's speed would have been fine if it hadn't been all gravelly and horrible. But Elfyn had obviously figured that out. But he had a huge moment and lost some time, but not much, just like a second or so. So that was at 1 minute 51. Then at 3 minutes 41 into the stage, Elfyn comes round a corner in much the same fashion as Thierry did, at the earlier stage. He comes round a corner, and you can see this quite clearly. You can see this on the fan footage, actually. And he cuts his line. He's 2 tyres off the road on the inside, very muddy. But the outside appears in the video to be quite clear. And I did look at it from the in-car's perspective, but it doesn't really show it that clearly. So you couldn't see. But he's just on the entry to the corner. And it's a very short corner, quite fast, that first one. The next one is tighter where he spun. But he just lands on the power, and there is an explosion of power. So it's basically like like Group B type power. It looks like that explosion of power. Do you remember that on the Group B Quattros? Yeah. And Lance's, there was just an explosion of power. All traction was lost. He flew up, immediately tried to recover it, and did a great job, managed to scrub the speed for the next corner. But he came at the corner, powered, the car just immediately lit everything up, spun everything, lost all the traction, moved across the road, and he tried very manfully to get the traction back and recover. And then about another minute or so later in the stage, a particular marker I put in. So obviously, Elfin had to turn around in much the same way that, well, actually quite a different way from the way that Thierry managed to get off the bank. Elfin has to spin around and gets on his way without terribly much time loss, almost exactly the same amount of time as Thierry took, because less than a minute later in the stage, on a particularly easily noted left-hander with some chevrons at it and a house just before it, they were back tied for time on that stage at 4 minutes 35. They were in exactly the same place again. So, totally different approach from each driver. Thierry was just a man possessed. I mean, honestly, full Tommy Mäkinen, you know, maximum attack, Colin McRae, maximum attack mode. Whereas Elfin was you would say, in to put an old analogy on things, maybe these analogies are out of date for all our listeners these days, but, you know, he was in Richard Burns mode, being intelligent and managing it. And interestingly enough, they were kind of, you know, at the point of both accidents, or the recovery point for the second one, they were back tied for time. Remarkable, really. Quite remarkable.
Yeah,
The
really
remarkable
thing, Alistair, was that mm-hmm. Thierry's car survived that impact. It was a huge impact.
Yeah.
Absolutely right, enormous. Yeah.
Yeah. That was testament to the strength of a Rally 1 car, wasn't it? Yeah, it was a proper
absolutely,
bump.
Yeah.
The other one that was really a surprise that it survived was Oit's moment on the same stage. You know, he went off the road as fast as Thierry.
The amount of luck in
that one, just to be able to keep going, is beyond me. It's a miracle we didn't lose half the field on that stage, frankly. Easily could have ended up that way.
Yeah. I've rarely seen a stage in such a mess.
Had his moment.
No, I think it was before then, before that one. Mm. But I mean, which moment? You know, Ogier, honestly, he said that, you know, I put the point to him that he was the one that didn't make the mistake. And he was very quick to say, well, actually, yeah, I didn't make a mistake, but I had more moments than I've ever had on any other round of the championship in my life. It was that kind of event, you know, which was bizarre because it maybe the conditions not changing and not evolving as much as we expected them to with rain coming in. Maybe that little beep into a false sense of security, because any tarmac rally is always changeable from corner to corner.
Yeah.
Cuts are coming, mud's coming, and it did change, but not as much as people expected, but still certainly enough to catch people out.
Well, that was full Lydon Rallycross, that was. Absolutely. I mean, there was bits in it so narrow, so twisty. I'd have been happy driving that stage if I'd been in an old Mark II Mini with a nice 8-port engine on it and a limited slip diff, low-set limited slip diff, and a very effective handbrake and, you know, lots of power from an 8-port engine. It would be, because then you'd have lots of room. You could, you know, you could spin that car and continue down the road.
But
it's so narrow, so twisty, so close to the edge all the time. Yeah, you needed a Mini to have a chance to. A Mini could have gone faster than that stage if you had enough power. Oh, I'm joking, but it was so twisty and narrow and so dirty. Goodness gracious.
Yeah. No, it was.
Speaking of moments. I was just going to say, speaking of moments of going off the road, Andreas Mikkelsen had quite a few of those during the weekend. Poor old Andreas.
Yeah.
You know, struggling a bit out there. Maybe so, but not in the right way. It makes you wonder whether he should have been assigned to the asphalt runs in the first place. Stick him in.
No, he shouldn't.
A bit of gravel.
No, he shouldn't. You know, this is something that we've discussed. You know, he shouldn't. From my side, Andreas is a fine rally driver on gravel. He's a great rally driver on tarmac, but, you know, by his own admission, he's more of a gravel man. I just don't really see the point of that policy from Hyundai. They've got Danny Sordo, who is sublime on asphalt, and for me, that was the way to go, and it just seems odd. And I remember the first conversation I had with Andreas about this and ringing him up and saying, yeah, I'm really surprised. And he said, yeah, you and me both. you know, I didn't see this coming. You know, fantastic, I'll take it. But, you know, I would have potentially, you know, I would have put myself on gravel. You know, rugby analogy, it's probably like putting Johnny Wilkinson in the scrum or Martin Johnson out on the wing. It doesn't make a lot of sense. So, yeah, an odd one and a good few moments. I'm going to write a piece for the weekend about Andreas. Because for me at the minute, he's struggling, and he's struggling. It's understandable why he's struggling, because he's not getting the chance to understand this car in consistent, stable conditions. You know, Monty was compromised, here was compromised, and he's trying to learn to drive these hybrid cars. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, he's trying to fight for his career. Mm-hmm. And I'm now going to stop talking, because this is all the stuff that I'm going to write on dirtfish.com at the weekend.
Oh, right. Okay. Save it for us, David. I need my reading material.
Fair enough. In that case, we could talk about something that has already been written a little bit about on dirtfish.com, and it's Adrien Formeau's performance, specifically, I think, on the power stage. You know, for me, that was impressive, because we'd never really had the chance to see Adrien put it absolutely 100% all on the line, all or nothing, and get it to the end and get the result. That is a step I don't think we've seen before, have we, David?
No, it was huge. You know, it was some performance that from him. It was
absolutely a brilliant weekend, I think, all round. He did a great job. That one tiny little mistake, which I think was just an unexpected little slip from the car when he was out there on the limit. But was he unlucky? Was he lucky? But it made no difference. The guy did the right thing. You know, leveraged what could be got back out of it, and he went back out there and absolutely smashed it. Wow, how cool was that? Yeah. It was fairy tale stuff, wasn't it?
He did. For me, it was brilliant. He absolutely picked himself up. You know, mentally, when you would have been on the floor, it was you know, that was actually the part that really kickstarted the debate in the car for the team of us on the ground in Croatia when we were talking to Adrien about the potential for chasing those, I think it was 19 or 20 seconds or something, that he was behind Oit Tanak going into Sunday. And we sort of said, you know, do you think you can make that up? And he just looked at us as though we were very strange and said, well, it's not about that. It doesn't matter now if I can make that time up or not, because I've got the points I've got for Friday, Saturday. It's all about Sunday. You know, the overall classification doesn't matter at all. Mm-hmm. It's about what I can do through the final day. And immediately, you know, I am a traditionalist, but I kind of thought, that's not right. You know, that's just, yes, he's exactly right in his strategic mental approach.
Yes, absolutely. But isn't it a shame? But it's,
100%. And that does, it completely comes full circle back to what Sébastien Ogier said. Mm-hmm. It's wrong. And it's wrong for that reason. You know, the overall classification still matters. You know, we need drivers that are pushing because they want fourth, fifth place, whatever.
It's a rally, not a race. It's not individual stage wins. It's an endurance event. There's an endurance element in rally that has been disrespected, actually.
Yes, I would agree with that. Absolutely, it has.
No. I don't like it.
No. On Formeau's performance on Sunday, one other thought that crossed my mind is, you know, the incident he had on stage 18 where he, you know, clipped that anti-cut marker while he was pushing. And he was really, really pushing at that point. He was second to Taka in the Super Sunday standings, clearly going for first. And it might be easy to turn around and say, oh, you know, Adrien, he's, you know, had a mistake because he's pushing again, just like the old days. But it wasn't, because I found it interesting to contrast it to the moment that Seb Ogier had on the Saturday. Remember, it was basically the same incident. You know, he came, he had a compression. The car was fully loaded up and he made the turn. It turned faster than he expected. Seb had exactly the same problem. You know, there's that clip that circulated where he just, he turns it in for the corner and suddenly it snaps towards the inside and he has to collect it up and he's just millimetres from absolutely demolishing the fence. Just completely wiping it out. And who knows what consequences that would have had. It could have been rally over. Okay, maybe it could have just been a few seconds lost. The point is that those two incidents, you know, when you really drill it down, fundamentally happened for the same reason. They were just a bit of bad luck, and it was just a coin flip. In the case of Ogier, he got heads, he survived, he kept going unperturbed, and in Adrian's case, he got tails, broke a steering arm, lost 15 minutes. But that's fine margins when you're going for it.
It was remarkable. It was a remarkable survival story. You don't often see that in WRC. I can't remember the last time someone did that on a stage like that and came back to get something worthwhile, albeit because of the existing rules. But it's just the power stage. It wasn't actually the new rules that gave them that. It was the
it was the ones that had been there for a while.
So you know, good on them. Good on them. Just kind remarkable.
Of, and kind of rallying at its best, if you think about it. Because I mean, I assumed when he stopped, I'm thinking, oh, he's going to go over the time limit here. He's going to valiantly try and fix that thing at the side of the stage. But he's only got half an hour to get out. He's not going to get out in time. It's going to be game over. What a shame. I actually can't believe he managed to get an entire steering arm fixed in 15 minutes. Yeah. Takes me like an hour to change my oil back at home.
He's had lots of practice, let's be honest.
But the point with that as well, with talking to Formo, and I think you wrote the story, Alistair, the great story on the website, the explainer from him. He immediately had the presence of mind to think, okay, new point score, no problem, park it up and let's fix it. There's no need to rush. And again, this is what this is something that's wrong with WRC right now, is that he pulled over and he wasn't bothered if it took him 5, 10, 15 minutes, as long as he didn't run out of time. It didn't matter. His overall classification didn't matter because he'd got those points locked in. And as long as he made the finish and the final control on Sunday, he was going to get those points for fifth place. So therefore, He just took his time, they fixed it, got it all sorted and carried on. How's that what this sport's about? You know, again, Formo did exactly the right thing. He took that sort of strategic approach, but it's just wrong. You know,
this isn't the old days anymore, in the sense that the itineraries are much shorter. So as soon as you lose 5 minutes in the modern
era, you finished anyway.
Your position's cooked either way. You know, it's not like
I would go with the current system allowing him to do that. I think that was very much in the flavour of rally. The chance of so you've got a problem, you can fix it, and you can still get something. And that for me is a big dilemma, because to my mind, that means that the new regulations have got a little value because of that. I almost feel.
Okay,
but I don't think, you know, a stage per point, a point per stage. Sorry, fine.
Is that enough, George?
5 points for the power stage. There's too much going around on a Sunday that one driver could get to recover, as we know, to finish in front of the winner, which cannot be allowed.
Yeah, so, but that
remedy that problem and
just a quick one, George. One sec. Mm-hmm. That point from Gus. The 5 points, up to five stages, you know, a point per stage, then you don't get any points on the power stage. There's no power stage, because this is increasingly the feeling among the drivers is, why do we need the power stage? You know, we've got a power Sunday.
You're not going to get rid of that this year, because undoubtedly the promoter will have sold that to a sponsor.
100%.
That's the one thing they're not going to be able to lose for commercial reasons.
But they can't change the point structure through in the middle of the year anyway. We know that. So that stays for 25.
But FIA said they would.
They did say that. But absolutely, it's not going to happen. It's not sensible to try to do that. But yeah, you're right, they did. But I don't understand why we're quite so beholden to the power stage. You know,
Totally. The
promoter has said this to me on time and again, that, you know, oh, we've got this appointment viewing, Grand Prix start at 1 o'clock. No, they don't. You know, we saw the first two Grand Prix this season were on Saturday night. So, you know, I'm sorry, but that is a very, very outdated view by a bunch of people who clearly, you know, they need to come and sit in our house. You know, people from the promoter. Yeah. Talk to my children who are 16, 18 years old. Do not care about appointment viewing. They don't even know what TV is. They watch everything on YouTube. So, you know, the power stage as an appointment viewing, it's a nonsense. It's an anachronism now.
True, David, but who pays the bills at the end of the
broadcasters.
Day? Broadcasters. Who foots the bill?
Yeah,
exactly.
Sorry, so don't, again, I'm sorry, we're working on an outdated model, Alistair, because that won't last for much longer either. You know, as far as I can see, that we have to get away from being beholden to TV because people aren't watching telly.
Do you know what do we do instead? Because the revenue model isn't there for anything else.
No, well, of course it is. You know, I had this conversation with Ken Block probably 4 or 5 years ago, and Ken said, telly's dead, telly's finished. And you know, there was a guy that was actually willing to go and help WRC promoter to work with them and to demonstrate what could absolutely categorically look what he could do on YouTube.
Yeah, he was incredible. Certainly very good at that, but absolutely. Yeah.
And so, suppose... you know, I'm sorry, there's your funding model.
Mm-hmm. Okay, guys, there's more to talk about here.
I think we've got to the end of that one. The one last thing on Croatia I wanted to talk about, its deal, is that an end now? And if it wants to stay on the calendar, it needs to find a new one. Do you think at this point, having seen Croatia and its additions over the last 4 years, is it now a required fixture on the calendar? Has it earned that status? Because if you look back the last 4 years, at least 3 out of 4 have been kind of, you know, blockbuster action. It's not okay this year. It took a little while to get going, but we got there in the end.
Three out of four have had finishes decided by less than 10 seconds. So, no, you're right. Mm-hmm. Absolute great event. Great place. Lovely country. Excuse me. Lovely people. The roads, do you know what? Tarmac rallying, I love it, but I love gravel rallying more. And I don't know. I think there's a lot of people there. We're in a capital city. And I heard some discussions that we might, you know, if it comes back, it might move out to the coast. And this is where I wholeheartedly agree with the promoter that they want us to be in capital cities. Absolutely, totally on the money with that. You know, I wasn't sure about why we'd moved out to a shopping centre in the suburbs of Zagreb. But that was, again, it was not a bad move because it introduced WRC to so many people on the Saturday. Okay, we didn't get back there during the day, but, you know, imagine your local sort of shopping centre on a Saturday afternoon. It was absolutely ho-chin, full of people, and they were all there. And, you know, they were coming and looking, what is this rally thing? I would imagine a huge number of people that had their first impression of our sport there. That's great. You know, we've truly taken the sport to the people. So I think, Alistair, the point is now that there are so many other countries coming, that, you know, there's, I guess this one potentially comes down to a financial decision of which countries can bid the most for a spot. You know, a really interesting discussion with Simon Larkin, that he said, you know, constantly he's got between 8 and 10 proposals from events around the world on his desk. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's we have far more events chasing a calendar slot than we have calendar slots. So events have to stand up, not just financially. You know, I think they need to provide the right sporting challenge, and they also, for me, they need that element of heritage and culture of the sport as well. And it's not fair to say Croatia doesn't have that, because
we've lost that though, David, haven't we? I mean, we should have 4, 5, possibly even 6 foundation events, events that are in, and that's it, you know. Monte Carlo, we've still got Finland, we've still got the rest, are all basically okay. Sweden's still there.
Greece, Safari, and GB.
Greece is back in, but how long is Greece going to stay?
Yeah,
you know, it's a terrific event, amazing.
But then should we have Corsica?
Argentina? Why are we not in Argentina? Yeah. It's absolutely ridiculous. We're not there. Fortunately, we're back in Safari. That helps. But these events need to become foundation events.
But George, we're going. You know, we're talking to Paraguay. We're already in Chile. We're going to Paraguay. We're missing the one South American event that we absolutely need to be at. There are political issues going on in Argentina right now that there are reasons rallying why we're not
has,
there.
Rallying has historically transcended all those things. It's been an absolutely unifying factor. The healing power of rally is immense. It's a religion.
It is, but I think, am I right in thinking we missed one in the early 80s? But fundamentally, the promoter knows that we need to go back to Argentina. They're working on it. And potentially, you know, the point is right now, if we can't get there, we can get to Paraguay. I absolutely adore Rally Argentina. Really struggled to get on with it to start with first few years, but just love the place and desperately want to go back to that.
Such
to that.
An atmosphere, such a fantastic
100%.
People. Your people are so phenomenally lovely.
And I'm not sure you get the same in Chile. Really looking forward to Paraguay to see what it's like there. But Argentina, for me, you're dead right, George. You know, we need those foundation events that, come what may, we have to find a way of them being there. But I don't know, for me, Corsica would have been on the list. But, you know, it's almost a moot point now, isn't it? Because the sport needs to be commercially viable. And
totally.
GB...
I get that. But
GB isn't. Corsica isn't.
Yeah. I don't see GB ever getting into the World Rally Championship under the current regime in Britain.
I would agree with that.
Not thinking about it at all. Not interested.
No.
In fact, I mean, now as a club competitor, I'm looking at an organisation that's just focusing on destroying rally. There you go. Ooh, that was
that's
that was
a strong
harsh.
Opinion
Spicy.
From George Donaldson.
Spicy.
Yeah.
But and I know the two people in charge particularly well. I've worked with them.
Yeah, it is very difficult because you know there was this message that came out about Scotland. We can go to Scotland. We might be going to Scotland. You know, we checked that out and we did our research, and Scotland's not coming. You know, I'm sorry to be negative, but talking to people in government, there's not the desire. You know, I fail to see that a country with such a strong history as ours, that we can't find a way to bring around the World Championship back. You know, it's enormously frustrating that Ireland has fallen apart. And, you know, the numbers, it's easy to manipulate these reports or what have you to say what you want. But we know the promoter is absolutely getting the promoters totally on the money. WRC brings a stack of cash to a place. It just does, you know. And that was very, very obvious from Croatia. You know, it puts a lot of people in the place, and it demonstrates. You know, the number of people that we talked to. We did one of our Know Your Place things, which we haven't really used, but we will be using. The number of people that one of the questions was, how many islands does Croatia have? The answer was 1,244. Number of people, the drivers that we'd said, how many? And they said, oh, we know this because after the first year in Croatia, we came back and we went on holiday. There you go.
Tremendous. Yeah, there you are. There you are.
There you are.
Yep.
Well, Croatia may or may not be in the past. It might be in the future. Someone who's definitely in the near future of the WRC is one Martin Sesks. He'll be making his debut, as announced, right after Rally Croatia. He'll be stepping into an M-Sport Puma for both Poland and his home round, Latvia. Interestingly, though, on the first of those rounds, there's no hybrid unit in the Puma he's driving. Now, David, I remember you covering this a few months back, and M-Sport's push to be able to run these cars without a hybrid unit. What do you actually make of this now that it's being put into practice? What is the rationale for ripping the hybrid unit out?
It's pretty straightforward in that events... I think this was aimed more at a national and domestic championship market, in that there is a required infrastructure to run a hybrid car on national rallies. And to remove the hybrid, you give drivers the chance to drive a Rally One car in domestic championships. So, you know, for example, if we had an eligible class in British Championship, French Championship, whatever, you could take one of those cars and use them. Because obviously you're then running just under internal combustion. Without the kind of safety requirements and safety infrastructure that you need to run a hybrid and a battery-powered car. So that was the thinking. Yeah. I was kind of surprised that it wasn't taken up, but still, you know, the running costs they're higher than a Rally 2 car, fundamentally. For me, you know, there are people out there that should be running these cars and could be running these cars because they are very, very entertaining cars to drive. You know, a lot of aero, good, powerful cars. And fundamentally, Alistair, you know, they are the safest cars that we've ever had. The tubular chassis, the space frame that they're running. We've seen some fairly hefty old accidents, and this safety cell at the FIA did absolutely brilliant work, massive amount of research and development into them. It's exceptional, and they are the safest cars we've ever had. One thing I would just like to say very briefly is we're very quick to knock WRC promoter. You know, numerous times I've banged on about the fact that if the promoter was doing its job, it would be doing what Bernie Ecclestone did. It would be bringing drivers, putting them in cars, blah, blah, blah. Good on you, promoter. You know, they've done it. They've absolutely spotted the opportunity, spotted the need to do it, and they've done it. They've done the job of a true promoter there for Poland and Latvia and Martin Sesz.
Fantastic. That is brilliant.
Yeah. That's quite brilliant. The U-turn from 10 minutes ago as well,
yeah,
David.
The power station, I don't get. You know, and I don't get it because of the evidence in this house that children don't watch TV, or the next generation don't watch TV. Simon Larkin is dead right. You know, his broadcasters will still be coming to him and saying, you know, TV, power stage is right. But I don't get it. And I disagree with him on that, on the evidence of what I've got here. He's got a huge amount of evidence. And that's why the policy continues. I'm not so sure. But on this one, I absolutely think they deserve full credit for it. And
well,
so does M4.
David,
so
on this M4. One too, it was a proper stage as well. It was a fantastic stage.
Sorry, I meant the Martin Sesk aspect.
Oh, the Martin Sesk thing, yeah.
But yeah,
oh,
you're
absolutely.
Dead right. The power stage, Croatia. Yeah. There's an argument saying Croatia should stay just to keep that power stage.
Yeah,
absolutely awesome.
A roller coaster. I have been in the car all the way through now with these drivers. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. It's crazy.
Yeah.
That would potentially also be the main downside of the rally potentially migrating south towards the coast. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but the power stage is the furthest north stage of the entire rally, is it not?
Yes.
Even if it's north of Zagreb, which logistically would make it very difficult to keep if you went to the port city of, how do you pronounce it, Rijeka?
Yeah, I think something like that. Rijeka. You're right. We were right on the border with,
I think, Slovenia.
Slovenia, exactly. That. I was going to say Serbia, the Slovenia. Exactly. And I knew that because we were very close to Maribor, where the round of the downhill World Cup was. And George, you should be heading on first weekend in May to Fort William to go and watch the first round of the downhill mountain bike.
Yes. Got a sneaking suspicion. For that first weekend, Samantha and I are doing another test day at Creil with her little Renault Clio 172.
Fantastic.
172 horsepower, well, light as a feather. So yeah, we're looking to make a massive step now for her, which will be quite good fun. Back to the same place. Talking of opportunities, David.
Yes.
We have got an opportunity to go auto testing.
We have. I have to say a huge apology to Gordon Clendinning, who is one of the nicest people you will ever meet that I haven't actually met. But he was just a great chap who's a big fan of Spin the Rally Pod. And I have to say, clearly, from the letter he wrote to us, an enormous fan of you, George. I think he may have met you. He hasn't met me yet. He'll be a far bigger fan of me when he does meet me, obviously.
I know the name very well, but I can't put the face on it yet.
But Gordon invited us to go auto testing and potentially drifting with him. Gordon, I am so sorry that I've cleared the desk out and I found your letter and your incredibly generous £20, which I will be giving to charity. We'll explain all of this story when we do go and see Gordon, and we do intend to. We are going to come. George and I are going to come, and we're going to go drifting, and Alistair. And we will come and do some auto testing with you. It is a great, great part of the sport. It's a great way in to motorsport, and it's something that that here at Dirtfish, we're keen to exploit every aspect.
On that note, not to better Gordon's offer in any way, but I have organised an introduction to auto testing, all forwards auto testing. This is like a miniature special stage, and what we do is we teach people the skills of handbrake on slippery surfaces to get them into it. We can demonstrate it, we can have mentors in the car with people, and we can just make comment and mentor people along. So I've created a series of very simple little tests, and then there's a few that flow together to help people to learn. And even some of our more advanced drivers will come and tidy up their act, because I've put some slightly longer little sections in. I've got 5 tests that can all run simultaneously, one venue, and that is the 18th of May. There you go.
Yeah, but that's... Definitely,
Salt
but
Our
that's no
Car
use
Club.
To
just join Alistair. Salt Our Car Club, and it's a free entry.
Sadly, I'm going to be in America that day for American Rally Association round in Oregon.
You have a choice, Sam. You've made your choice.
A great place to be, but
definitely,
we'll have to take a rain check.
Gordon, I will chuck you an email or a WhatsApp, and we will be in touch, and let's make it happen. I'm very keen to come along, and we'll make a Dirtfish video. And demonstrate to the world. What do you do, George, if you've got an my Volvo's got an automatic handbrake? It's
you're
got 5 cylinders.
You're not using it. You need it. You don't need a handbrake to do an all forwards auto test, but it takes a lot of the fun out of it.
Yeah.
So you need a manual car, basically, a very simple car. Come
or
along,
a rent,
you know.
Do
go,
we dare say a rental
buy,
car? No, we really shouldn't
buy,
say that, should we?
No. And buy an old Peugeot 106 for 500 quid and come along to an auto test.
Right, I shall do that.
And you will have as much fun in that as anyone has in anything.
Right.
Because the skills are exactly the same. There's slippery surfaces, there's grippy surfaces. You don't need to have anything except a road legal car. In fact, you can, if you bring a car along in a trailer, you can come along with a non-road legal car, actually. People come along with specials. Believe it or not, very simple specials, but it's club rallies, it's club motorsport at its absolute finest, very inclusive. And I think there's even an option for the 14-year-olds. Yeah, 14-year-olds can do auto tests with a parent or guardian in the car or an approved co-driver, a vetted one. So, yeah, there's huge manner of opportunity, and that's as competitive as you want to make it, but what you do learn is a huge amount of skills of car control at low and medium speeds.
It's skills that will only stand you in good stead.
Yeah, me too. I can't wait to get back behind the wheel of a car. It's been a very long time since I was last driving in anger. In fact, it was been one of our school cars, the Subaru WRX in Snoqualmie, Washington. Give that a go.
Inexcusably long. Get you out there. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I think we all have places to be, sadly, so we are going to have to wrap up this episode here. But thank you, as always, to you, the listeners, for tuning in and listening to us. Thank you to David and George.
Yep. Thank you to you, Alistair. Brilliant job.
Thank you, Alistair. Lovely.
Thank you very much. Yes. Hopefully, I'll get slightly better as time goes on, but we've made a start.
We all have to start somewhere.
With that, we do need to seriously wrap this up. So stay tuned. There will be an Olympus special episode, I hear, David. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, I'm sure we've beaten them to it, though.
I'm keen.
So stay tuned for that. I'm sure we've beaten them just. So stay tuned for that. And we'll be back next week. We'll see you there. Thanks again. Rally on.